And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello, I'm Sasha Kaplan. And although last week our episode, or 2 weeks ago, our episode ended on a slightly debating note, we are going to kick off Kaplan's Right the Movie today. And it's going to be glorious.
For those of you listening at home or at work, which I don't know why you'd be listening to us at work, or listening to us in a car, please don't listen to us in a car. That would be horrible. We're talking about Captain America Civil War. Where are we at now? We were at negative 18 the last episode, so that means we're at negative 24.
Yes.
So to our negative 24 listeners, we hope you're not listening in a car. And
please be safe, stay indoors as much as you can.
Yes. Can't say the same for me, unfortunately, still.
With that sad note, let's turn that sad frown upside down. And
for Captain America's Civil War.
I've always wanted to say that to someone. Let's talk about Cap was Right the movie. I mean, Captain America Civil War. I'll get it right. So this is, after Winter Soldier, I think this is like my second favorite. And yes, there is a reason it's another Captain America movie that just like, oh, Captain, my Captain. Whew. Anyway, there is a lot going on in this movie. We'll go through the plot just like we do every episode, but we have to talk about the competing narratives of this film. And we also get to talk about the comic.
I'm eating jelly beans at this point now. I'm just letting Sasha go ham on this thing.
So let's get to it. Captain America Civil War was a comic published in 2005 by Mark Miller. It was about a superhero registration act and the civil war between Captain America's faction, which was against the superhero registration, and the Iron Man faction, which was like, we get healthcare benefits and government. We work for the government now. So the comic itself was kind of a mixed bag. It did a lot of things okay, and a lot of things why, and some we were just like, oh God. And there was a few moments you're like, oh, that was clever. But to kind of start things off, Civil War starts with an incident, a very dramatic incident that brings a lot of media attention. In the comic, it has to do with this group called the New Warriors, who are on a reality show about their adventures, and they go to this house, which a bunch of Z-level supervillains are at. Okay, I think it was like D-level villains, and one of the villains ends up running off and he blows himself up, which leads to the death of like 600 children in Stamford, Connecticut. I can never look at Stamford, Connecticut the same way again. And so this leads to a lot of backlash for the Avengers even though this has nothing to do with the Avengers or the super, like, and it leads to the Superhero Registration Act. So I'll add these little bits of comic reference stuff into this as we go, because that's my favorite part. So
Just for the record, I've eaten about 15 jelly beans already. I'm almost at our negative listener count.
So we'll also be talking about how the film reflects on the greater MCU, the films that it set up, and how this film leads kind of pretty directly into Infinity War and Endgame. So we open in 1991, when nothing important happened in Russia, like at all. So we are in Siberia, and Michael's looking at me funny for some reason, and it's a Siberian bunker. It's a bunker in Siberia, and there's a little red book that has a little red star on it, just like it does on Bucky's arm, and we see Bucky. So I don't know if this is a plot hole that the movie explains, like, if it was a plot hole, or if it's just like, It's a weird gray area, because it's a Russian Soviet Hydra bunker. Like, okay, so at some point, Zemo, who gets recruited into the United States, rescues the Winter Soldier, and then he gets sent to, I guess, various bases for various reasons and missions. Okay, well, we're just
No, Zemo wasn't part of that.
I didn't say, oh, not Zemo, Zola.
Yeah, that's more like, yeah, Zola.
What is it with Nazis and having names that starts with a Z?
No. What is with people from Hydra and having last names start with Z?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. There's such a huge difference between Nazis and Hydra. Like, their outfits are green. Yeah, I got nothing. Hydra is Nazis. So we see Bucky, who has just gone through yet another memory wipe. And there's actually a legit Russian actor. Thank you. Thank you for that, Marvel, who is giving him the Russian trigger words. They're not the trigger words themselves aren't important, but they welcome him back. I don't know why that didn't come up in Winter Soldier, but I guess there was no time for it.
Well, I think here's the thing. The whole point of the Winter Soldier was the mystery.
Right, that's
behind
true.
The character.
That's true.
Whereas now with Civil War, you're getting more backstory to the character. So it's like you start with the mystery and then you work with fleshing him out more.
So let's talk about Sebastian and the Russian language. It's not the worst. I think given the fact that he's from Europe, he could have done a little bit better, but I'll forgive it. He has a lot going on. So fine.
Well, also keep in mind the way the character is supposed to be played at this point is essentially tortured. Are you really going to be getting that type of perfect dialect out of that type of character for all that abuse?
I still think the diction could have been just a little bit better, but I see where you're coming from. The funny thing is I think the diction was better in the first time he says it in the 1991 flashback than when he does when he's being interrogated by Zemo, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So he is sent on a mission and he goes after some car on a motorcycle and he recovers something that is liquid and blue.
Gray, liquid and blue.
Yep. And there's a car, and he causes a car crash to get the blue liquid. All right. So now we are in Lagos, which is in Nigeria. And Nat and Steve and Sam and Wanda are there, and they're on a mission to apprehend Rumlow. Remember the guy that got barbecued at the end of the Winter Soldier?
Actually, he didn't get barbecued. He had a building dropped on him.
And he got barbecued because there's an explosion.
Oh, yeah.
When the thing crashes and the thingies go boom. He got crushed, filleted, and barbecued. He's not having a good life.
I thought they charged extra for that type of service.
That's his problem, not mine. So we see that this is a mission, but this is also kind of pigging back of Age of Ultron. So we see Sam, he has Red Wing, which I am forever disappointed that Red Wing is not a real Falcon. I am not sorry to say that. I know it's unrealistic. I don't care. I wanted a real Falcon. Okay. That's over.
Breathe.
Back to the plot.
Breathe. Take a deep breath.
So there's the Institute for Infectious Diseases, and I guess there's something there that Rumlow wants. There's some really good wiring work as the fight kind of begins. There's some good spy work. And we see that Sam, which didn't really need that much training, but you also see Wanda doing more with her powers than she did in Age of Ultron, where she just threw stuff at stuff and pulled stuff. And we're also kind of getting away from her mind trick powers because they never related to Wanda in the first place. So I'm glad they're moving away from that. Thank you, Russos. Let's see. So there's a bioweapon to make a long story short, there's a bioweapon that's a disease in a bottle that Rumlow steals. And there's a gas that Wanda uses her powers to evaporate. It was kind of cool. And then Rumlow's men, I'm sorry, have the bioweapon. Sam and Nat go after them. Cap goes after Rumlow. There's a fight in a market. There's some really great fighting choreography in this movie. Natasha's fight choreography, especially in this scene, is just so amazing. How she's tackling on the two guys, it was great.
Is it just me, or is it that Scarlett Johansson's fight scenes just get better and better?
Because I think they do. Yeah. I also think that, like, in Avengers, it was very difficult to, like, I think it was a lot harder to show off her fighting techniques in that film than it was in the later films, partially because she's fighting aliens.
Well, I mean, she had the one fight scene with the general and his men.
Yeah. So there's stuff, like, there's some cool stuff that she does, like when she stabs that one alien in the first Avengers movie and uses him to steer. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But here we really get to see her on a more grounded level, just like we saw in Iron Man 2. So that was awesome. That was just awesome.
Yeah.
So there is a second bomb, and Rumlo is that bomb. And Wanda tries to prevent the explosion from killing the people in the market. Unfortunately, and then she like ends up lifting him with the explosion. And unfortunately, she thought she got it clear to the people, but the explosion went outward anyway, and a building collapses. And people die.
No, building
it doesn't collapse. It doesn't collapse.
It just explodes into the building.
It explodes instantly. And the people inside on that specific floor are incinerated. And those people, we find out later, were emissaries from Wakanda. So, we flash to kind of a strange scene. We actually flash to the Stark residence, where we see Maria in front of the piano, and we see Howard, and they're just like, oh yeah, we're about to go on this trip together, and we see this like very young like Robert Downey Jr. and they did such a great job with it. It genuinely looks like they just time traveled, grabbed young RDJ, and plopped him in that scene. Like, it was awesome. And so Howard and Maria are going on a trip, and this is the last time they'll all be together, which is like a really weird thing to say to someone. And so we're kind of left to wonder, like, is this a flashback? What is this? And then we find out that this is like a program that Stark had created, acronymed BARF, that helps people deal with trauma and things like that. And it's like a $6 billion little experiment, therapeutic experiment, but it's really cool and has a lot of really awesome implications.
And will play a role in the last film of Phase 3. Spider-Man Far From Home.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's... Okay.
Remember how we talked a couple episodes ago about how almost all the villains in the MCU are something that Tony created in some form or fashion?
Oh, yep. You're right.
Yep.
You're right. I completely forgot about that. So with that in mind, Tony's actually giving a talk at MIT, and he basically funds all their projects because he's an MIT alum, and he's just like being very,
and he's a freaking he's a freaking billionaire. I mean, he can do it.
He's trying to, I guess, like, rescue his conscience or be at peace or whatever. But the funny thing to note here is, or well, it's not funny for him, it's funny for me, is that Pepper's absent, and he was supposed to introduce her, but then she didn't show, and it seems like they're on the outs, which, like, after Age of Ultron, I can't really blame her.
Which, if I remember right, Pepper was only in that film for like a cup of coffee for Age of Ultron.
She wasn't in, even in the movie.
That's right. She wasn't. Yeah.
She was not in the movie. We'll get to characters that could have been cut out of this movie in a bit. There's at least one. So Tony, after the everything, Tony heads to the bathroom and he's like standing by the elevator, and he meets a woman whose son was killed in Sokovia. He was like an aid worker or something. He was like there to build houses for the poor. So first, let's go back to the comic. During the funeral for the children of the Stamford incident, in Civil War, the comic, Tony is basically spit upon, and granted, I'm working off memory here. I have not read this comic in like 10 years minimum. and by one of the mothers of the children who died and like berates him for this because it was his fault. It's like, it wasn't his fault. And what's important to note is that in the comic, we actually see the Avengers and the X-Men helping with the relief effort of the school that explodes and everything. But anyway, little fun side note of comic book trivia. So
you're saying we should have had the X-Men in this film?
No, because the X-Men actually get a pass from the Civil War. They are, it's one of those things where, like, they're recognized that they're almost like their own autonomous nation, sort of. And they're basically like, this is your problem. Like, there's a scene where Tony actually goes to see Emma Frost at the Xavier School. And he's like, Emma, baby, bubby, can you join the fight? To my side, and Emma's like, where were you when our kids were being burned in Genosha? No, you weren't there? Okay, this is your fight. Have fun. And the panel where she does it is actually really, really, like, disturbing, because as she says it, you see her, and it's like a black, dark background with a bunch of skulls. It was epic. So Emma very politely told Stark to take a hike. So let's see. So Tony is definitely, so in the movie, this woman berates Tony. She is actually an employee of the State Department, which is really interesting. Take note of that, Michael. That'll be important later.
Wait, what was that again?
The woman that talks to Stark in the hallway as he waits for the elevator, the one, she says she's from the State Department. That's important.
Yep.
Let's see. She says she doesn't care, that he only fights for himself, blah, 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 blah. So then he goes to the compound, and this is where we're told that 11 Wakandans were killed in Lagos, who were there on a goodwill mission. And King T'Chaka is giving a statement about the violence and how the Avengers don't care or something like that. And Steve basically turns it off. And so one of the things that has been critical of Wanda said that she didn't care about what she did. And yes, she does. So first, when the whole thing happens and the explosion occurs, she's horrified. You can see that on her face. And then in the next scene, like, she's very much feeling guilty, but she doesn't know what to do. And so, So the media is blaming Wanda, and Steve walks in, and she's like, it's not your fault. And she's like, well, you know, turn the TV back on. They're being very specific. And Steve says it's actually his fault because Rumlow said Bucky, and all Steve could hear was Bucky. And let's not forget the fact that Rumlow's a jerk and lied about Bucky. He deserved everything he got. And next time, maybe nobody gets... So there's this whole thing about, like, you know, if they stop what they're doing, then maybe next time nobody gets saved. That's definite foreshadowing. This is the foreshadowing to the Civil War, actually not even the Civil War, but to Infinity War and Endgame, because it's kind of alluding to the division of, like, well, what if the Avengers aren't there? So then Vish kind of, like, waltzes through the wall, and this is also, like, the continued hinting at the relationship between Wanda and Vision, which is very important for certain things for the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Fight me. So Vision shows up.
I don't think anyone was fighting you on that one.
Oh, believe me, there will be people. So Steve is informed by Vision that Stark has arrived with the Secretary of State. Don't you think it's a little convenient that a woman from the State Department whose son just happened to have died in Sokovia just happens to meet with Tony Stark at an event at MIT? I'm putting on my tinfoil hat for this. I have no regrets. The tinfoil hat is coming on. All right. So we meet the Secretary of State. It's General Ross from The Incredible Hulk, because we totally wanted to see him again.
Well, I mean, it's a good tie-in, though.
I know, because but what's I hate the, his guts.
But what was the last thing that we saw of General Ross?
He was being drunk and talking to Tony.
Exactly. So it's the best tie-in right there. They had brought back Edward Norton, but that's another story for another day.
So 5 years ago, apparently Ross had a heart attack and he gained perspective through this experience. And he calls the Avengers vigilantes, says they're dangerous. And then he puts on the TV and you see like flashes of New York because like New York was totally the Avengers' fault. Like, wasn't it S.H.I.E.L.D. that wanted to nuke New York? Like, that was a smart idea.
No, it was the World Security Council. Yeah.
Useless pieces of crap. Anyway, so then you have the Hulk, and he's, like, destroying parts of New York. And then you see D.C. and the Potomac and the helicarriers crashing. And then you see Sokovia and then Lagos. And Steve says that's enough because he sees that Wanda's just like, oh, God. And there's this whole thing about like, oh, you're people with powers without supervision. And the governments of the world have created a solution. Just like magically, they've created a solution, like instantaneously, like a couple of days later. They call it the Sokovia Accords, which are allegedly being co-sponsored and signed by 117 countries. I wonder which countries didn't sign, but like, that's a separate conversation for another day.
Here's the thing. I don't think, like, if you look at the timeline of Age of Ultron and Civil War, you have another movie in between that can theoretically add time because it's called the Sokovia Accords. So it's something
fair. So it's probably been cooking for at least a year, very behind the scenes suspiciously, and Nobody's talked about it. Needs my tinfoil hat.
Well, keep in mind, how often in politics do we hear about bills and stuff like that outright right off the bat while they're still in the process of being worked on and having things hashed out?
They have a website.
Yeah, I know.
You can go on the website. All right. Fair. My tinfoil hat is still on, so I'm going full on conspiracy here, and I have no regrets. So basically, Ross tells them that the Avengers will no longer be a private organization that operates on its own. They're going to be operating under the supervision of a UN panel. And only when they say go do the Avengers collect their $200 and go to wherever they need to go. This is by far way dumber and more politically frustrating than the Superhero Registration Act. Because first of all, I'll get to this in a second, but then Ross says something about like House Thor and Banner, you know, if I misplaced a couple of megaton nukes, and I'm like, the United Nations doesn't have weapons. There's a very good reason for this. And you just basically handed them the loaded gun. Because this is, you know, Thor and Banner, because Ross makes this comparison that they're weapons. So you're just handing the United Nations weapons.
Keep in mind, that's something that's a carryover from the Incredible Hulk because he never viewed Banner as a human being after the accident.
Yeah. But keep in mind here of what's going on. Like I used to teach civics and like poli, and like I know enough about poli sci that I find this universe politics really, really fun. I'm a nerd. Hello. So it's this is like a recipe for disaster. For so many reasons because Steve brings up this point later on that like, well, who's going to be on this panel? What if there's a place we need to go that they won't send us because of political reasons? Or what if, you know, there was something like this? Because that's a very real possibility. If, you know, Russia is marching into Ukraine, is Russia going to be on this panel? And then what if Russia says no? Like, will they have veto power in this council? Who's going to be on this special panel? Like, and this isn't to completely crap on the United Nations. They do a lot of really amazing work. But this is, they also have a lot of faults. Like having countries that violate human rights repeatedly, blatantly, sit on the human rights panel. countries that give women no rights are on the women's rights panels. Like, do you see why this is a little weird?
And I think that's okay. The point that they're trying to make.
I know, which is what I'm getting at. So we've got like a ton more pages of my tinfoil hattery here. So just sit back and relax and enjoy your gummy bears.
They are jelly beans, young lady.
Whatever.
Jelly beans.
Whatever. I actually blanked on the word jelly bean. Gummy bears is the first thing that popped into my head. Anyway, we go to Cleveland for some reason because there's a dude there who lives very much like I expect somebody wearing a tinfoil hat to live. Very closed off house. Looks like it's still 1991 where he's at. And all of the windows are like wood paneled. And somebody's like, oh, please, there, you know, I just need to use the phone, blah, blah, my car broke down, yada, yada, yada. And this is our villain of the movie, Zemo. And he basically kidnaps the guy and is like, oh, he finds the red book. And this is the colonel we saw from 1991. And he says, mission report, December 16th, 1991. So when we first see him, he's very ruthless because he literally drowns the guy. But he's also anti-Hydra. So when we first meet Zemo, and unless you know that Helmet Zemo is a big Captain America villain, you don't really know who this guy is. And like, sometimes I kind of wish I could watch these films as a non-comic book nerd just to not be able to piece these little things together. But then I remember I like being right a lot, so this is better. So Ross has a Medal of Honor. I have to say, I really want to know what Ross has done to earn a Medal of Honor, because I would not elect him dog catcher, let alone award him the highest military honors imaginable. But again, I'm coming at this with my own anti-Ross bias. I also really got to question President Ellis's capacity for brain power, because I can't imagine that General Ross would make a good Secretary of State. He doesn't really seem like the guy that likes playing politics or even likes other countries, but I don't know. He's big advocate for the UN right here, so who knows? So after Ross leaves, he's like, oh, I'll give you some time to think about it. The Avengers begin to argue. Sam doesn't approve. Vision's kind of statements, kind of like, oh, our very nature invites challenge and we need oversight kind of thing. It was just like, okay, you're cute for an android. Thank you. That it was like one of those very like nuanced general expletive statement things that doesn't really help the situation. And the thing you find interesting is that Rhodey is with Ross, which I guess kind of makes sense because Rhodey's been a military guy. He's served in the military his entire life. So he understands the nature of taking orders. The contrast here is, of course, Sam, who also served, who was, you know, honorably discharged or just medically discharged for whatever, however he was discharged, most likely honorably because it's Sam, who's like, this is not a good idea. And so you have these two military men of different valor and different wars. I think Rhodey's in the Air Force, and Sam was a pararescue. I think was he in the Army? I don't remember. But you have that contrast between these two military men.
Never really explained.
They just say he was a pararescue.
Yeah, they never really explained what Sam was in. I think that would probably made him that. No, that probably would have made him probably Marines or Army.
That's I think that's an important thing to find out. When in doubt, always go to the wiki pages. They are awesome. He was in the United States Air Force and former national, and then in the Air National Guard. So I said, Air Force was the only one that really made sense. But anyway. Also, so Tony is the one that is the really, after Rhodey, he's the most active voice in favor of the Accords. And let's talk motivation here. Tony is still feeling guilty about losing Pepper. He's feeling guilty about creating a genocidal robot. He, in my opinion, is still carrying over that guilt and thinks that thinks he needs, like, big brother, mommy dearest, big daddy holding his hand and telling him, no, you're not allowed to do this. Whereas in the past, for him, that was Pepper. So he thinks he needs some kind of higher power or higher authority telling him what to do and what not to do, because he thinks he can't trust his own instincts, which, like, again, after creating a genocidal robot, I don't entirely disagree, but this is not the best way to go about this. And he says something that I think is really dangerous. He says it needs to be put in check, and whatever form that takes, I'm game. And that's very, very dangerous, because you're giving away all of your power and all of your ability to choose, which is something that Steve says to the Contrast. And Steve says that, you know, we need to take responsibility and all this jazz. And at the end of the day, I think what the Avengers needed was a good PR person. But we'll get to that. So Rhodey says that Steve is being arrogant. And, you know, Steve does bring up the point that, like, you look at, like, the UN is made up of people. Just like I mentioned, people have agendas. Countries have agendas. And this is no different than SHIELD or HYDRA or the World Security Council. Because, again, the World Security Council wanted to nuke New York, remember?
Yep.
And I wish somebody had pointed that out, but there's a lot packed into this movie that, like, fine, but, like, come on, the world, they tried to nuke New York. Okay. So Steve mentions that ability to choose, that the safe in hands are still their own. And let's be real. Who do you trust more, Captain America or a whole bunch of countries and governments? The answer is very simple. It's Captain America. And that makes an analogy that, like, they can still drive with one hand on the wheel. And Nat says we've made some very public mistakes, and Nat kind of agrees with Tony, and she doesn't really like the fact that she's agreeing with him. And Sam looks at her like, aren't you the lady who told the government to stick it? And so you have these seeds being sown of who's going to align where. And where do agendas lie? Okay. Then Steve gets a text, and we flash to London, where Peggy's dead, finally. Oh, my God. Whew. Sorry, that was mean. But, yes, Peggy has passed away peacefully in her sleep at the ripe old age of 95, so good for her. May we all live that long and have that wonderful life that she had. So she has a lovely funeral in what I assume is, like, Westminster Abbey or some other big, like, church in London. I find it slightly odd, though, that a woman who moved to the United States and spent her entire life working in the United States is buried in London, but I guess sometimes you just want to go home.
It depends on also what's in the will.
That's what I mean. So, okay. So the first person to say a few words, actually the only person that gets to say a few words at Peggy's funeral, is Sharon Carter, who is her, like, niece or something. And
It was niece.
And this is the only part of the movie that genuinely makes me angry. Here's why. The line that she says is paraphrased, that, like, when the world and the media and everyone is telling you to move, your job is to plant yourself firmly and say, no, you move. So this is a paraphrase line off the real line that Steve Rogers says to, I think it was either Eli Bradley, Patriot, or Spider-Man in Civil War, about how sometimes even when everybody says something is right, that doesn't make it right. And they give this beautiful line, this wonderfully, I think it's, like, the best point of the entire Civil War comic, and they give it to Sharon Carter because she needed to be in this movie. And I actually, to preface this, I actually really like Emily Van Camp. I think she's very sweet. I think she's very lovely. I really like seeing her on screen and other things. I just feel bad that she's wasted on a character as boring as Sharon Carter. because, as I will speak later in this movie, she could have been completely cut out of it. Like, you could have given her role to Natasha, better cementing her as this double agent, which she's later revealed to kind of be. Sharon is ultimately very pointless in this movie. Like, she brings up some valid points, but they could have been said by Sam. The things that she says could have been said by Sam. The things that she does could have been done by any other character, including, like, Maria Hill. Remember her? Okay. So Rhodey, Stark, and Vision, shockingly, sign the accords, and so does Nat. Clint says he's retired. Wanda is TBD. And Sam is a Captain America guy, so he does what Captain America is doing. So with that, Natasha is flying to Vienna for the signing. So the accords are being signed in Vienna at the other UN headquarters that I guess are no longer New York after, the little alien incident. Probably best. So let's see. So Nat keeps trying to convince Steve to sign, and Steve's just like, I can't. Let's see. So the UN conference, they're all there. All the countries are there. And we see the first shot of T'Challa, aka Black Panther. And he talks to Natasha, and T'Challa doesn't like politics, but he supports the Accords. And I think T'Challa demonstrates throughout the course of this film that he doesn't quite understand the implications of the Accords. And I think in a lot of ways he learns the danger, the issue at hand when he becomes a victim of them. I find it's also really weird that a country that has been isolated nation for centuries suddenly supports all of the governments of the world banding together like kumbaya.
Well, that's going to happen when you have some of your people killed.
I guess so. But so T'Chaka is also there, and Natasha apologizes, and then T'Chaka starts giving a speech, and T'Challa sees like a van outside through the window, and he sees the bomb sniffing dogs reacting or something. He's like, oh, everybody get down, and there's an explosion. T'Challa, likely because of, Wakanda's being the Black Panther, he survives without a scratch. Natasha has a few scrapes, and T'Chaka dies there.
So no, T'Challa got beat up a little bit. He had cuts on his face and stuff.
Really? Like, barely noticeable. Okay. So T'Chaka dies, meaning T'Challa is now king of Wakanda. But he's also very vengeful and wants to find the person. The media very quickly and totally not suspiciously finds out that the person behind the bombing is like, there's like a photo of him on the media as the Winter Soldier. So Steve and Sharon have like this little bond right before Sam comes in, like, hey, there's something going on in Berlin. Sharon, it works in Berlin for the CIA, Joint Terrorism Task Force thing. So Sam and Steve and Sharon go to Berlin. Nat checks in on T'Challa, and T'Challa is like, he wants vengeance. And Nat says that, oh, the task force will determine who goes after us. Like, out of curiosity, how much of that task force is left after the explosion? But okay. I'm starting to think that, like, Everett and Thaddeus Ross are the only people actually in charge, and this is all just, like, a massive conspiracy to stop superheroes. Like, that is my tinfoil hat. Because, let's, like, anytime the Accords are involved, it is Ross. He's the only, like, governmental official we see. Not the chairman or, like, the General Secretary of the United Nations, not the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. It's just the Secretary of State. Which is interesting because we're also given no okay, so the Accords are basically a treaty, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so quick civics lesson. Anything ratified by the United Nations that the U.S. tries to get on board with has to be what?
Approved by the Senate.
ratified by Congress.
Yeah, or ratified.
Congress votes, and Congress can say check or reject. That's why we didn't get involved with the League of Nations under Woodrow Wilson, because Woodrow Wilson said yes, and Congress said no.
Yeah, it wouldn't have worked out well, because we saw how it worked out in the WWE when they did that, and that tanked horribly. Sorry, there will be people there who know what I'm talking about.
Okay. They're part of our negative 24 listeners?
Yes.
Okay. So T'Challa doesn't care about the Accords all of a sudden.
Neither does the picture in the background either.
That's not relevant anymore. It's not the picture's fault. It's hanging by like 5-year-old tape. I'm surprised it lasted this long. Anyway.
For context, Sasha had a picture up, and as she was saying that, her line, it literally fell down like it just did now again.
Like I said, it's being held together by like 5-year-old tape. But anyway, for those that don't are curious, the picture is actually a printout of a photo of Big Barda, who's one of my faves, with my ultimate fave, Lady Blackhawk, and from Birds of Prey. Anyway, it's a fun moment. But back to Marvel. So Steve calls to check on Nat, and Nat's like, I know it's Bucky, but you can't go after Bucky. And so Nat goes, Steve, no. And Steve goes, Steve, yes. So Steve is the only one that is, like, legitimately speaking, Steve is the only one who could actually bring in Bucky. A, because Bucky knows him, and B, because he's not dressed like, you know, a bunch of SWAT guys that may or may not be Hydra. And, you know, Bucky has a really awesome metal arm that could just, like, beat the crap out of people, as we find out. So Sharon is the one that gives Steve the info about Bucky and being responsible for the bombing and where he is. And so, well, the bombing he finds out about on television, and then Sharon shows him the, like, legit channels, what they're saying about Bucky's location. And like I said, Sharon could have been cut out of this. This could have been done by Natasha. This could have been done by Maria Hill, who we haven't actually seen since Age of Ultron. We don't see her at all for the rest of the MCU.
No, we see her again.
Technically, we see Kobe Smulders, but we do not see Maria Hill. I mean, it looks like Maria Hill, and it talks like Maria Hill, but it's not Maria Hill.
No, I'm talking about the end of Endgame. You see her at the end of Endgame, you see her in the end credits of Infinity War.
Oh, fine, glorifying, fine. We see, this is the last we see of her until she gets snapped.
And comes back for a funeral.
Oh, that's right. I forgot she was in that. Anyway, so Sam kind of sides with Nat, but he has Steve's back. And so Zemo, meanwhile, is learning Russian in a hotel room and has a strange looking device just like casually sitting in the closet of his hotel room. I'm sure that won't be important or anything. Bucky, funny enough, and ironically enough, is in Romania. Why it's funny is because Sebastian Stan is from Romania. Fun fact, Sebastian Stan was the exact same age, 9 years old, that I was 9 years old when I moved to America. So, fun bit of things that I have in common with Sebastian Stan. So, he sees that there's a guy at a newsstand that's, like, looking at him funny. And as he gets closer, the guy, like, runs. And he sees that he's being blamed for the bombing. So, Steve arrives at Bucky's safe house. And we see that Bucky has, like, this notebook. And it looks like it has, like, pictures of Steve and things that's... So, Bucky's, like... very obviously starting to remember and remember stuff. Meanwhile, German special forces are right behind them. Steve says, do you know who I am? And Bucky says, no. And Steve knows he's lying because, you know, they've been best friends. And I think I talked about in the Captain America of the First Avenger review, how Bucky's essentially, the MCU Bucky's essentially a combination of two different characters, which is Bucky from the comics, Steve's sidekick, best friend, you know, friend, and Arnie Roth, who is Steve's like childhood best friend and protector. So there's a fight, Steve and Bucky and the German forces, and Steve's like, and Steve does ask him, like, did you do it? Meaning the bombing, and Bucky's like, oh, I don't do that anymore. Long story short, there is a chase scene that happens with cars and everything, and it's basically like Bucky's running, Steve is running after Bucky, T'Challa's running after both of them, and the German special forces are like slowly trickling behind. So this was actually done, and I have this in my note here, the chase scene was actually done without CGI. And I really appreciate that. Like, there's effort put in. So at the end of this, basically everybody gets captured or arrested. And Rhodey just like flies down, and his pretentious Rhodey voice is just like, Cap, see this? You're a criminal now. And I'm just like, not the time, not the place. And fudge you just because you're a colonel telling a captain that he's a criminal. Like, really?
I think that was the point.
I know, but I'm still annoyed because, yeah, I'm allowed to be. Where did it go? So, there's also kind of this cool moment where Bucky just, like, grabs a motorcycle and knocks the other guy off and just, like, wraps it around and climbs on. That was kind of fun. There's also an interesting moment where, like, Steve recognizes, as they're in the car, T'Challa's giving some exposition, and Sam and Steve are behind him in the car, and Steve's like, your suit, it's, you know, vibranium. And Sam makes a couple of cat jokes, which I appreciate. Let's see here. So back at the compound, while this is all happening, Vision is attempting to cook.
Oh, that's right. Sam was there too.
Where?
Remember, Sam was with Steve.
Yeah, I said that. He was making cat jokes in the back of the prison.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah.
So, back
in New York. For some reason in my brain, my brain was computing that you said Bucky was making cat jokes for whatever reason.
I thought I said Sam.
I don't know.
It's entirely possible. We've had this problem before. Last week, I confused Sam and Scott and Hank, see? Anyway. So back at the compound, Vision is attempting to cook some Sokovian dish, which is called paprikash. I think it's like some European dish. I don't know. So he wants to lift Wanda's spirits, and he's like, no one hates you, Wanda. And I'm like, oh God. Like, they're like, it's in their brain. They just kept helping their amygdala. And there's this little touch about the infant, the mind stone inside of Vision, and how he gave Wanda his power, her powers, and powered the scepter, and blah, 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 blah. It's like Wanda says her spirits are lifted, but she's like trying to fix it because he's like, you know, I don't eat. And they're both kind of trying to figure out their place in the world. I think Vision, because he's kind of still new, and Wanda, because she's lost her entire family and her way of life, and she's trying to still adjust. And this is the first time we actually, like, this movie really establishes, I think, more of a contrast between Wanda and the rest of the Avengers, because she's, like, 18 or 19. And that, I think, is kind of important and will factor into what we will see later, maybe, like way, way down the line of the MCU. So let's see. So Wanda says that whatever that is, it's not paprika, and she needs to go to the store, and Vision won't let her leave. And he's like, oh, it's just for now until like the Accords are on like more stable ground. So let's clarify here. Wanda is officially under house arrest. No trial, no jury, no court, no lawyer, no rights. And then Tony acts like, oh, she was happy at the compound. Like, you gotta put her under house arrest, like without like any discussion or the chance to even defend herself. So like, fudge you. So let's see. Everybody's brought into this facility, which I guess is the CIA headquarters in Berlin or whatever. Bucky's secured in like this little box thing that I'm sure he won't be able to get out of. And that he's going to be given like a psych eval, and then there's going to be, and he's going to be extradited. We meet the other Ross, Everett Ross. And so Steve, let's see, wait, nope, already said that. And that they'll write them a receipt for the confiscated stuff. So like the shield, the suit, and basically Sam's entire makeup, everything. So Ross wants Steve and Sam prosecuted. T'Challa, my guess, has diplomatic immunity. Let's see. Apparently the shield and the gear are government property, which like, I need to see the schematics on that, because Steve was buried with that shield, quote unquote, under the ice. And technically like the first suit they stole from a government facility, but the second one could have, I think was like likely made by Stark. So like you could build a really big case that this is private property and not government property, but I guess it depends on who foot the bill. So Tony pulls something out of Howard's like archives, which was the FDR, like the pens FDR used to sign the land lease bill in 1941, which, so the land lease bill, for those that don't know, is a bill that allowed the United States government to assist the Allies during World War II. So France, Britain, with supplies and things like that. It's likely, as Steve points out, brought the US closer to war. But yeah, that is the Land Lease Act. Let's see here. So Tony tries to extend an olive branch to Steve. He tells him that he and Pepper are basically on a break. And he doesn't want to stop the way that Pepper wanted him to stop. And he thought that the Accords would split the difference between being a superhero and being at home. And I'm like, this is, if you want to get your girlfriend back, you need to have a conversation with your girlfriend and get your girlfriend back. Don't sell your soul to a government entity. Like, that just never works out. So Tony really hated Steve as a kid, I guess, because Howard like idolized Steve and really missed him and probably talked about him a lot. Tony says that they need Cap. If Steve signs, basically like everything will be fine and everything will be legit, except Bucky will still go to jail. Instead of like being sent to Wakanda, which like, first of all, Bucky would not be sent to Wakanda, legally speaking, because, like, this is going to be a jurisdictional nightmare, because technically the crime that Bucky's allegedly committed happened in Vienna, which is in Austria, so he would be remanded to Austria, because he blew up a United Nations building in Austria. Like, that's Austria's jurisdiction. Why would he be remanded to Wakanda? But I think Tony probably didn't know the legality of it, and he probably also did it to try to like pressure Steve to sign the Accords. Steve's about to sign, and Tony really should have stopped talking. But then he talks about safeguards and how like, oh, like these are just safeguards, and like these documents can be amended later after PR. And, you know, after Wanda and Steve are reinstated, and Steve's like, wait, what about Wanda? And this is where Tony reveals that Wanda is under house arrest. And Tony's like, it's for her protection. I'm like, and Steve calls it internment, which is, I think, an extreme word to use. But he's also not wrong. Because, you know, like I said earlier, no trial, no lawyer, no judge, no jury, no conviction, no anything. Like, it's just like, okay, you're on house arrest now. And like, I'm not saying there isn't a valid reason to put Wanda on some kind of house arrest, because she did blow up. Her actions inadvertently led to the deaths of the Wakandans. Arguably, though, there could have been a death of twice as many Nigerians if the bomb had exploded in the middle of the market. But that's something you argue, like, in a court of law with a lawyer. And I know this is a movie, but I'm having fun, so let me have this. And Wanda basically had no clue. It's not like somebody came to her and said, okay, Wanda, because of this and this and this, we're putting you on, like, temporary house arrest for an unforeseen number of days or whatever. That didn't happen. She wouldn't have even found out about it if she hadn't decided she needed paprika. So Steve definitely sees Wanda as a kid, and Tony thinks he's doing what needs to be done to stave off something worse, which is really funny because all of the actions here, because of the lack of Avengers, lead to something worse. So the Accords are the, like, gateway into something worse, whether they, without realizing it. So Steve doesn't buy it and leaves the pen because he hates to break up a set. Now, this is interesting. Zemo poses as a psychologist to assess slash interrogate Bucky. Meanwhile, a German guy drops off that weird thing we saw in his hotel room into what looks like a, like, an electricity hub. I don't know what they're called. Michael, any ideas?
Probably like a power generator area or something like that.
That what he said.
Yeah.
So,
that thing he said.
Yeah. Let's see. So that thing, meanwhile, like, Sharon clicks the remote so that they can watch the interrogation, and
she gives them the
receipt,
the paperwork for their outfits and stuff.
The receipt. And I don't remember what the punchline was, but Sam was like, really? Are you kidding me?
Well, it was called, like, flying
bird suit. No, yeah, it was like a bird suit. He's like, are you kidding? And Sharon's like, don't look at me. I didn't write it.
Yep.
And again, this could have been done by Nat. Because, like, Nat signed, I think, for the sake of signing to be legit, not because she necessarily thought the Accords were good. So her being a double agent would have been more interesting if this was something that was consistent in the movie. And it would have been great if some of these scenes with Nat, with Sharon, had been filled by Nat, obviously, except for the whole no, you move line, but that could have just been, like, in the last will and testament of Peggy Carter, you get this book, and that is the line in it. So, let's see. Steve starts to question, like, the thing about Bucky and the report and the explosion. And he comes to the conclusion that someone framed Bucky in order to find him. But then why do you need to find Bucky? So suspicion, and then everything goes dark. Everett wants eyes on Bucky. Sharon tells him where Bucky is, so Steve goes to Bucky. Zemo uses the blackout to trigger the Winter Soldier. And he keeps saying this mission report, December 16th, 1991. It's interesting. So Zemo lets Bucky, like, because he goes all Winter Soldier, he breaks out of the prison and, like, goes crazy. And Steve isn't really fooled by anything. Zemo says something that he wants to see an empire fall. And then Bucky knocks Sam out, throws Steve down an elevator shaft. Sam goes after Zemo, but Zemo's gone. And Steve goes after Bucky. Tony trying to fight Bucky was really funny. Because he's got, like, that little hand blaster thingy, and it's just like, you're not a fighter, Tony, so, like, why are you even trying here? Natasha does a much better job of fighting off Bucky.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing, though. Tony was never a fighter.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he was always reliant on the suit.
Yep. So, let's see. There's a moment where, like, Bucky has Nat pinned, and she's like, you could at least recognize me. Then Black Panther, this is a slightly better fight. The building evacuates. Bucky tries to escape on the helicopter, and this is when we get that epic scene of Steve holding the railing and holding the helicopter. And that was just, oh, that was lovely. That was absolutely lovely. Thank you. Thank you for that. And that was not CGI. Obviously, it wasn't like a literal helicopter, like, it was all Steve It was all Chris Evans holding the helicopter on the railing, and it was just a pleasure to look at. So thank you everyone who took part in that. That was lovely. Thank you for giving that to us. So the basic long story short, both Bucky and Steve fall into the water, and Steve is the one to pull him out. This is a reverse from when Bucky pulled Steve out of the water after the helicarrier crash. That word is not fun to say.
Helicarrier.
Da, 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 da.
Wait, what are you, Yondo now?
If I could whistle, sure. Mary Poppins.
I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
Hey, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So Zemo, throughout the couple scenes, keeps listening to this voicemail, and then he boards a plane to Moscow. So Bucky is reported as escaped, and Steve and Sam take Bucky to like what looks like some kind of abandoned factory, because they just know where abandoned factories are in Berlin. And Bucky, this is where we see that scene that we saw at the end of, after credits at Ant-Man, where Bucky's talking about, oh, your name was Sarah, and you used to put newspapers in your shoes. So we know that Bucky's back. So then so Bucky tells him that he's not the only Winter Soldier. And then we get this flashback again to 1991. Where the blood and the serum that Bucky takes, and there's these new soldiers that are arguably just as strong, if not stronger, than Bucky, but they're also more psychotic. They're an uncontrollable death squad that can, like, topple governments overnight and all that jazz. So they don't really have a lot of people they can turn to for help. And this is where Sam says, well, I know a guy. So Ross basically tells Tony that, like, no, special ops will handle this, as Ross is prepared to basically kill Barnes, because that's how we do things now. Tony buys some time, says, yeah, 72, 36 hours, whatever, we'll bring him back and bring in Steve and Sam. Nat points out that they're kind of understaffed, and Tony's like, can we get the Hulk? And Nat's like, you really think he's going to be on our side of this? Hey, any side that Ross is on, Banner is as far away as possible. Although I do wonder what happened to Betty. Oh, well. So Nat says, Nat and Tony kind of look at each other, and they both have this idea. And Nat's like, Tony's like, what's your idea? Where's your idea? Downstairs. Where's yours? And then we go to Queens.
And some very, very, very hip music.
And I ignored the music. So little dorky, adorable little boy named Peter Parker comes home to see his unusually attractive aunt, played by the queen of beauty, Marissa Tomei, who is talking to Tony Stark. And I think they've been in like two or three movies together, Robert Downey Jr. and Marissa Tomei. But it's really funny because Tony is like, oh, the September Foundation. And it's a very cute moment of like Peter's like awkwardness and Tony's like trying to be smooth. And basically, like, poor Peter, he has been Spider-Man 6 months. He's like a 15-year-old kid and nobody else knows. And like, he just needs like a hug and someone to tell him it's gonna be okay. He doesn't need to be kidnapped to Berlin. But I find it ironic that like Tony called Wanda, like we were talking about how Wanda is a kid, and here is Tony Stark who talks about taking responsibility for his actions and doing things the mature adult way, and he's recruiting a 15-year-old boy to fight some like legit Avengers and people with military experience and more fighting prowess than this 15-year-old kid.
So it looks like Marissa Tomei and Robert Downey Jr. outside of MCU only did one movie called Only You in 1994.
Was it really only one movie?
Yeah, and apparently they dated during that time frame too.
There it is. I like the line about the unusually attractive aunt, and how Aunt May is like, well, we come in all shapes and sizes. And like, I think this is the most realistic portrayal of like an aunt actually taking care of, you know, her nephew compared to like an older woman who's like old enough to be his grandmother. But, you know, they do come in all shapes and sizes. So Tony knows that Peter's like skilled. He doesn't really, the funny thing is like, he doesn't get that like most of what Peter does is him. It's not the suit. So it's really, really funny. Even the webbing, like it doesn't come out of Peter, but Peter developed it. And like Tony, I think really didn't know what to do with Peter. And this is something that carries over because he's incredibly brilliant. He's a scientist. He develops his own webbing. Like, you can put that kid to use. Give him a scholarship. Like, but Tony's just like, okay, thanks for helping. Go be a superhero by yourself now again. Like, and like, Tony sort of tries to make up for it at the end of Homecoming, but so Tony needs Peter to go to Germany. Says, okay, but don't tell Aunt May. Back in the compound, there's like a fire and Vision's like goes to investigate, but Wanda like realizes there's somebody in the house and like tries to throw a knife, and it's Clint Barton, who's like unretired. Says Cap needs us, and he's here to take Wanda. Vision tries to stop Clint. Clint stops Vision. Wanda's kind of unsure if she wants to go, and Vision's and Clint's like, you want to be a kid, go to high school, or you can be an event. Like, it's something along those lines. I don't remember the exact point of dialogue, but that was the point. And Wanda decides to go with Clint. And she, like, crushes Vision down several feet. She's like, they'll never, you know, they'll never stop being afraid of you. And she's like, well, I can't control their fear, only my own. Oh, my God, this movie is so quotable. So they have one more stop, though, because they gotta pick up Scott. Nat goes to talk to T'Challa and, like, convinces him to help, I guess. Sharon brings them back their gear. And I'm taking a slight pause here because this is, again, one of those scenes that, like, okay, Steve and Sam needed their gear back. Nat could have gotten them their gear back. Anybody could have gotten them their gear back. But there's one scene that could have been completely cut, and it's this random kiss. Of, okay, it's not so random because they were like slowly building up a flirty will they won't they relationship with Sharon, but it's just, it has no basis for it. He doesn't even know her. She's just kind of like, oh, she's Sharon, she was my next door neighbor, I didn't know her name, but whatever. It's just like, it was pointless. I thought it was unnecessary because after this scene we never see Sharon again.
But we got a great meme out of it, though.
I think Sharon is actually, Emily Van Camp is actually reprising her role as Sharon Carter for Falcon Winter Soldier, I believe. But that's neither here nor there because we're not there yet. And again, like, we have not seen her since then. Steve kisses Sharon. So they go to the airport in like this beaten up Volkswagen Beetle. It was really funny. Sam and Bucky bond. That's important. So I've noticed oftentimes, this is in this movie specifically, Tony doesn't talk to Wanda or about Wanda. He talks down to Wanda. There's this like attitude of like, you are safe. That just comes off as like you've been a naughty girl, Wanda, and you need to go back to your room. And it's like, it's unnecessary. Like, he says like, oh, you hurt Vision's feelings. It's like, she's not 5 years old. She's a grown woman. Like, you don't, like, come on. Seriously. In Iron Man 2, Tony literally destroys the entire Stark Expo with his fight with the Whiplash or whatever. And it's like, who's never destroyed anything, cast the first stone. So Scott is all Scott is basically all of us. His first interaction is like, oh my God, it's Captain America. You're just like a fine human specimen. I'm shaking your hand too long. Like, this is just, and this apparently was like improvised, and it was just like Paul Rudd freaking out, which is just the best.
And that's the great thing. It's like, we've seen it, and you'll see it with Infinity War, with Thor, because you're coming from this very colorful, you know, set piece essentially from Thor Ragnarok. And then you're going into the dark world, the dark reality of Infinity War with the Russos. And this is one of those moments of, while yes, the Russos are working with the actor and the director of that film and thing to keep the character the right way, this is also just one where they just were like completely hands off in a way with a character and just let the actor just do the character the way that the character is has to be done. You can't darken Ant-Man.
You have to
let Paul Rudd as Scott Lang be
just do Paul his thing.
Rudd. Yeah, just do his
be
thing.
Scott Lang. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And you'll see that comparison used again when we get to Infinity War and Endgame as well.
So with that, Steve's like, you know, we're kind of, if we do this, you're going to be a criminal. Scott's like, yeah, I've been there, done that. And just as they're about to do something, the airport is being evacuated. So Tony knows they're there. I'm not sure why they decided to go to like a national airport instead of like a small regional airport to just like hijack a plane. But I guess you do with what you can, because they're on a time crunch, because Zemo's going to Moss to Siberia to like release Winter Soldier. So they were on a time crunch.
Well, they were also trying to get a specific plane. And they might not have been able to get that specific plane at the regional airport.
I don't think it. I mean, they could have gotten a jet. That would have been fast. But anyway.
Yeah, but they
wanted, don't get the plane they wanted to anyway, because they end up stealing the Quinjet. Or I think, no, that was the point, to get the Avengers to show up so they could steal the Quinjet.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of these moments where like one character tries to reason with the other character. And it doesn't go anywhere. So that happens at the beginning of this airport scene. And then Peter shows up and he like takes the shield, and Peter's kind of a dork and it's kind of adorable. But then like you realize that like what Tony is doing essentially is very dangerous. All that talk of responsibility and like he brings and like talking about how like, you know, they were talking about how Wanda is a kid, but then Tony brings a literal kid into this fight. And, like, I'm all for team superheroes, but, like, in this context, it seems a little bit dumb. And then Tony calls Steve an idiot for getting Wanda and Clint into this because, you know, like, they don't have free will or anything. So I don't want to talk about the whole airport scene because there's a lot that happens, and this episode's probably going to be really long. So here I'm going to cut to the chase on a couple things I like. Wanda's powers are awesome. Peter and Steve's interactions are incredibly hilarious. Peter fighting with Sam and Bucky was really funny, especially when like Red Wing ultimately like gets Peter out of that situation, and Bucky looks at Sam like, you couldn't have just done that from the beginning. Sam's just like, shut up. So a couple great moment from the comic book is Scott riding on Clint's arrow. Like, that is taken directly from the comics, not the Civil War comic from in this case, but it's just, it's great. And I love it. And I appreciate that nod to the comics. Let's see. There's a lot of infighting of who's fighting with who, and they're running at each other, and the fight is really, really awesome. Something to note is that it is here that Nat ends up directly helping Steve and Bucky, because she slows down T'Challa, who ends up hitching a ride on the Quinjet anyway to Siberia, but holds him back enough that they can go. Tony is kind of getting, I feel like he gets more irrational, a little bit more like insane as the scene goes on. And the final caveat is Tony and Rhodey try to stop the Quinjet. Sam tells them as they approach as like Steve is trying to get on the Quinjet that like, we're not getting out of here, we're the distraction. And Rhodey acts, so they tried it, and Sam follows Tony and Rhodey with his suit. So Vision tries to blast with his eye beam at Sam, but Sam moves at the last minute and it hits Rhodey, and Rhodey falls and Tony can't catch him. Other things to note in the scene, Scott Lang goes big and he doesn't get to go home. Him growing large was actually awesome. It was really epic. Him telling Steve to throw the little disc at the water truck that turned out to not be a water truck was also really great. The Peter's whole thing, like, did you see that really old movie, The Empire Strikes Back? And Rhodey's just like, how old is this person? But Bucky and Steve and T'Challa get out of that situation. The rest of Capside does not.
Well, the interesting thing is that also with Tom Holland as, you know, Peter Parker, he had a really good dynamic with Bucky and Sam.
He did. He also had a really good dynamic with Captain Steve. America, yeah. With Steve, with this whole thing, where are you from, kid? He's like, oh, I'm from Queens. He was like, Brooklyn. Like, okay, we get it.
But not only that, but also like the little mini fight scene the two of them had where he was like, oh, and the one thing that Tony told me, go for your legs.
And what else did he tell you? That you think you're right when you're wrong and that makes you dangerous? And like,
Steve is kind of like, he's kind of right.
Steve is also right. And we'll continue to get to this. Let's see. So they get away. I like, also one thing I really like is that Scott is referred to by Sam as Tic Tac. And when Sam and Scott first see each other, Sam's like, yeah, that was cute. And that's never happening again. It was like a cute audition. And Steve also tries to reason with Tony and tell him that, like, there's these Winter Soldiers and these things, the whole thing. And Tony, he tries to tell him about Zemo and the explosion at the UN and everything. And Tony didn't really ask the right questions. So Zemo arrives in Siberia and he calls the hotel back in Vienna, I guess, so that someone finds the body of the doctor who is played by one of the Russos. Let's see. Steve and Bucky feel guilty, about Steve's friends. Bucky feels guilty in general. Rhodey ends up, there's a high chance he's going to be paralyzed, from where to where, we're not sure, but he has some significant damage to his spine. Berlin police find the body, and they also find a mask, one of those like face masks that Nat used in Captain America: The Winter Soldier, in the hotel room to look like Bucky Barnes. So now it's more obvious that somebody framed Bucky, and that was Zemo. So Steve Stark then goes, you know, get me the chopper, and he leaves somewhere. So where does Tony go? He goes to the Raft prison. And again, in Civil War, the comic, they also built a prison for superheroes. Thank you, Reed Richards. In the freaking negative zone. Which is just twice as bad. But here, it's an underwater prison called the Raft. So, they were arrested. No charges, no lawyer, no jury, no judge, no trial, no nothing. That part comes later because we know in Ant-Man and Wasp that Clint and
Clint and Lang both took deals.
Yes, they took a deal. So I guess that part comes later. But this is the question here. The only person, so the Raft prison is supposed to house the most dangerous and most powerful of criminals, right? Okay. Scott, Clint, Sam.
And I think Wanda.
And Wanda, but there's a reason I'm mentioning these three specifically. Sam, war veteran, no suit, no powers. Clint Barton, sharpshooter, could probably make a shank out of a paperclip, but no powers. Scott Lang, no suit, no powers. Like, arguably, this is the stupidest place you could have them. It makes no sense. Also, there's a scene later. We don't see Wanda at this point. We see Wanda later where she's in a collar and a straitjacket. Now, the collar, I get something to cut her powers off. Explain to me the straitjacket.
So
no
she
powers,
can't...
no powers.
Yeah, extra precaution. I mean, it's kind of like with best analogy would be Deadpool 2. Because remember, they used the collars on the mutants.
No, this is why I said the collar makes sense.
Yeah.
To stop the use of powers. I've watched The Gifted. I've read Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
The collar, I understand. The straitjacket, I don't. Because you cut off her powers, her hands are just hands. There's no reason for it.
Maybe to prevent her from trying to remove the collar or tamper with it.
That's a stretch at best. I think it's overkill. Stark tries to tell Ross about Zemo. Ross doesn't really care. He's basically useless anyway. Clint really lets Tony have it. Like, really. He also mentions about, like, oh, don't let, like, Tony near, like, don't make sure Stark isn't watching your back. He'll break it. I'm just like, whoa, that is a sick burn it roadie. So Tony admits his mistake, I guess, to a degree, and he like cuts off the security feed so that Sam can tell him where Bucky and Steve actually went. So he goes. So as Sam and Bucky arrive to the prison, we learn that all of these Winter Soldiers were killed by Zemo peacefully in their sleep, and he's just like in an iron-sealed nuclear bunker watching. And Tony arrives to help, and all three of them walk in. So they...
With one of the best lines of when Tony shows up and Bucky has the gun pointed on Tony, and Tony and Steve make the truce, and he's like, all right, Reindeer Gaines, you can put the gun away. We have a truce here. That was a good line. I like that line.
Yeah. So Zemo brought them out, brought them there out of like a sense of revenge for the fact that he lost everyone he ever cared about in Sokovia. So his line about the Empire crumbling from within, this was all a ploy so he laid these seeds down and he started this whole thing to get the Avengers to destroy themselves from within. And it's actually kind of a very complicated but brilliant plan. So then the TV turns on and it's December 16th, 1991. So the car, which has the serum that Bucky takes and the car that he crashes, belongs to Howard and Maria, which like, I kind of saw that coming because why else would you mention Howard and Maria if that wasn't going to be the payoff? And we see that Bucky actually murders Howard. And it's actually really painful when, like, he grabs Howard and Howard's like, Sergeant Barnes? Like, he recognizes him and then he's just killed. And that's just so sad. I feel bad for Howard. Who I don't feel bad for, though, honestly, is Tony. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I feel bad for him.
Well, no,
like,
don't forget. Don't forget. The real thing that did it was...
I'm getting to that. So Tony's obviously distraught because these are his parents. He lost them, but he's like, okay, why are you showing me this? And then it's, you know, Bucky is the murderer. And it's also revealed that Steve knew that Hydra was responsible. And in Winter Soldier, it's not blatantly stated that Bucky killed the Starks, but it's very heavily implied. And for Stark's death, so it's possible that Steve pieced it together later, but the point is that he didn't tell Tony about it. Stark goes after Bucky, Steve tries to protect Bucky, and it's just like this this 2-on-1 fight. And Tony doesn't really want to listen to logic, and like, at this point, I'm not sure what he's going to get out of beating the crap out of Bucky. There's no end game here. There's nothing to be gained from it. Other like you want to punch something, go punch the rest of this building. Like, crumble it to the ground. Bucky, like, there, it's pointless. But I get it. He's distraught. He needs an outlet, and Bucky is that outlet.
Because at the end of the day, while Bucky was under the mind control,
it was still Bucky.
Bucky still killed Tony's mom.
Right. And the funny thing is that, like, that's the point Tony makes. He's like, you killed my mom. It's not, oh my God, you killed my parents. It's, you killed my mom. And then it's, what was it? Oh, I lost my train of thought. Let's see. There's a lot of, the music is really good, especially around these fights. It's epic, but it's also very tragic. So there's this moment, this is it. So Tony, like, grabs Bucky and he's like, do you even remember their names? And Bucky's like, I remember all of them. And so, like, Tony essentially, like, the thing is like, if Tony listened from the beginning, this would be a lot easier. Listened about Bucky, listened about Zemo, listened about anything before it was too late. And Steve should have told Tony the truth behind his parents. 100% he should have done that. So the fight continues and it progresses, and there's this, it's absolutely epic watching this 2-on-1 fight. The Steve and Bucky passing the shield back and forth. Tony is holding his own purely because of the Iron Man suit. And you see this blast of Steve's, like, Tony's blast of Steve Shields. And that is just, like, direct image from the Civil War comic, which I unfortunately don't own the original Civil War comic. I only own a few of the tie-ins. But it's worth a read if you're interested. And so at the end of this, Tony loses this fight, but in the end, they all kind of lose this fight. Bucky loses his arm, and Steve basically grabs Bucky, and they're about to walk away. And it was kind of petty, honestly, like, of Tony. He should have just, like, taken the loss, but no, he's like, that shield is government property. And Steve's like,
well, no, he didn't say it was government property. He just said that shield didn't belong to you. My father made that shield.
Right. And so...
yeah, he didn't make it about the government. He made it about his dad.
I thought he said something about it and then brought in his dad, but
no, that's fair. He just said that you don't deserve that, you know.
Right. That shield doesn't belong to you. And so one could argue that Howard made the shield and he gave it to Steve to use, but whatever. But the thing is, it's like this is where the painful moment sits in. Steve's like, okay. And he just drops the shield and the shield just falls, and you see it with, like, T'Challa's claw marks. And that's just, like, that's painful to watch. It's just, like, oh, my God, he's just not Captain America anymore. He's just, like, that's it. Like, how does Captain America not have a shield? And it has a lot of weight to it. Meanwhile, T'Challa talks to Zemo. And he sees that Zemo is consumed by vengeance. And now so is Tony. And that's why the Avengers are fighting. And in that moment, T'Challa makes the decision that he doesn't want to be like that. And Zemo does demonstrate some remorse, and he says that he's sorry for killing T'Chaka, and that, like, and then he tries to kill himself and tells his backstory about, like, why he wanted to kill everybody and losing all his family in Sokovia, blah, blah, blah. But T'Challa stops him from killing himself because, like, you don't get to die. You get to pay for your crimes. The one thing that I found kind of amusing in this is that, like, during the Stephen Stark fight, Stark says Steve says something like, he's my friend, talking about Bucky, and Tony says, so was I. And I'm like, well, not really.
Well, you could kind of tell that a friendship was forming over the films.
But, like, we don't really see much of a friendship. We see mostly them being antagonistic towards each other. Like, you see a little bit of, like, what could have been a friendship in Age of Ultron. But then Tony builds a genocidal robot, and that causes friction. So there's never really, like, oh my gosh, look at Steve and Tony bonding. So I thought that scene lacked a little bit of, like, context. But yeah. So that's kind of the end for that. Zemo's given the same prison cell, quote-unquote prison box, that Bucky got. And Everett's very amused by it. And Tony goes back to the compound to, Vision is playing chess and he's helping Rhodey with his PT. with tech that Tony invented, which weirdly enough is actually based off of technology that was developed originally in Israel, that is like real technology that helps people to walk. Just kind of cool. Then Rhodey is like kind of taking all of this surprisingly well. And he does this whole speech about how he flew like 138 missions and each mission could have been his last. And so it's nice that like he's okay with what's happened, even though he acknowledges that it's unfortunate. But despite all of this, Rhodey still believes in the Accords, which is like, all right, fine. That's your view.
That's the career military man
talking. I know.
Yeah.
Still though. Then of course there's the Stanley cameo that I just want to mention because Tony stank and Rhodey's just like, yes, thank you. That is what I needed right now. You know, table for two for Mr. Tony Stank. But there's a letter. There's an envelope and there's a letter and a cell phone. And it's a letter from Steve where Steve apologizes, sort of, and he's like, you know, if you need me, I'll be there for you, and that's the phone to contact me. But he's not going to abandon their friends, and that like, there's still wrongs that need to be righted. It's a very nice speech. So the last scene is actually the raft, and Steve is there to break everybody out of prison.
Well, so, just really Sam. And Wanda.
Yeah, at this point, it's just, you're right, it's Sam and Wanda, because Clint and Scott took the deal, so.
Yeah.
So, Sam and Wanda, but still. And we also know that Natasha has to go into hiding as well, because T'Challa told Ross that she, like, helped Steve and Bucky escape or whatever. And Nat seems, like, perfectly okay with that. So, with that, I love this movie. I love the politics of this movie. I love the, like, despite how much I harped on Tony's side, I think that the people that were, like, Team Tony, like, the movie does balance the two very well. And they're both right, but they're also both wrong. And this is, like, the marketing for this movie did such a good job, too. Everything was, like, Team Tony or Team Cap, and it was great. Definitely have to hand it to them. This is a great film because of the questions and implications that it asked. A lot of the ones that I ranted about with my tinfoil hat. And I enjoyed it. But let's talk about the after credit scenes. Because the first after credit scene is Bucky going under in Wakanda, which is kind of funny because Tony, that's a kind of a foreshadowing of the line that Tony said about like Bucky going to Wakanda. So Bucky ends up in Wakanda to basically work out all the brainwashing kicks so that he doesn't end up being brainwashed again and so that he doesn't get triggered again. And he'll get his arm back eventually. He's taking a nap. So T'Challa is actually very sympathetic, as it turns out, and is perfectly happy to let Bucky be there and help Bucky. And as it pans out, with Steve and T'Challa looking out Steve says something like, they'll come after you if they find out he's here. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. And the camera pans and we see the big Black Panther, obviously setting up the Black Panther movie. And the second after credit scene is also important because itty bitty little Petey Parker comes home to Queens. And he has an ice pack over his face. And and I've been talking for like 2 hours at this point.
90 minutes.
An hour and a half. My throat's a little sore. A little dry. But the final credit scene is... So May's like, what happened to you? And he's like, oh, I got beat up by some guy from Brooklyn. And Aunt May's like, well, I hope you gave as good as you got. Or something along those lines. And we see the spider signal, like, in the ceiling, which is setting up, of course, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yep. As we have a knock on the door.
And it is Sasha's the cat. Like,
go away. Oh, it's the
coming
cat?
To join me. It is my very cute, very, very snarky kitty named Mr. Darcy. But with that, It's a good point of wrap up. Mr. Darcy has decided he doesn't want to be here with me as I talk. So the film is amazing. It does a lot of things really well. I think it really balances out the two sides to say, okay, well, Steve was right, but also wrong in this way. And Tony was right about this, but wrong about this. And the thing that most important takeaway is, I think Zemo did succeed. He's the only supervillain even before Thanos that actually succeeds. He wanted to destroy the Avengers from within and put a wedge. He did that. Now, as a result, what happens in Infinity War is kind of Zemo's fault inadvertently. Because one could argue that had the Avengers not been divided and had they stayed together and had the Accords not happened, maybe they would have been able to see this coming. At least some of it. So with that, I think is a perfect time.
The IMDb score.
Yes.
So Captain America Civil War, which came out in 2016 with a PG-13 rating, clocked in at a total of 2 hours and 27 minutes, which made it the longest MCU film up to date. Scored a 7.8 out of 10.
I feel like that should be higher. I think that should be higher. I think that movie deserves a little bit more love. I think if you come in looking at it as a superhero movie is the wrong way to look at it. I think you need to go in looking at it as like a political film. And this film as an adaptation of Civil War, or loose adaptation, is so much better than the comic. This is one of the few times I will say the comic is actually not better than the movie. Because the comic failed to properly balance out the Tony side, which I think the movie did better. I think Civil War ended up being like directly or indirectly, intentionally or unintentionally, a little bit more one-sided towards Cap, proving that Cap was right, which like he is. So like, that's fair. I'm fine with that. But if you're trying to tell a story about moral complexities and ethical questions, you need to balance the two.
Yep. So with that, Sasha, with your raspy voice and with Mr. Darcy at your side, where can the people find you on the social medias?
As always, to our negative 24 listeners, it is geekgirl101.tumblr.com and at geekycaptain on Instagram. You can see all of the fabulous pictures of my cat.
And then, of course, you can follow me on the Twitter at thelindenbaum75, facebook.com/x75productions, and, of course, txhthockey.com/nerdy-notions. Is where and you can find the show and the archive as well.
And with that, we thank our negative 24 listeners for joining us or not joining us tonight. And we hope that we will see you next time, or not see you. We hope you will enjoy listening to us next time as we delve into the not quite yet trippy world of Doctor Strange.